change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Pod Scooby. I'm Josh Smith.
And I am M-Bone.
M-Bone, what's up? It's been a while since you and I sat down. What you been up to?
I went on a little vacation to the East Coast. It was to PEI. It was a lovely time. The weather was kind of crappy, but other than that, had some lobster and some mussels and, you know, just taking some of that East Coast charm.
Yeah, did you go to – is Lobster on the Wharf still a restaurant out there?
I'm sure it is, but we did not get a – chance to go there.
Ticat fans run that place. Every time I talk about PEI, and I think I've told this story on the show a million times, but when I went out there for Touchdown Atlantic, yada yada yada, went to that place. The guy that runs it is from Hamilton, so it was weird to go across the country and then run into a fellow Hamiltonian when you're there. You never expect that, right?
No, you don't. Not on the East Coast. I don't think I've ever been there, but. I went to some nice restaurants. There was a nice one right on the water. They call it an oyster bar. So,
ooh, sounds good.
I had some good times.
Yeah, seafood's my one of my vices. I mean, I have many vices. I'm a fat guy. I like food. What can I say? But yeah, seafood is. If you think you've had good seafood and you're not living on either the East or West Coast, you're sorely mistaken. I don't want to tell you how much I spent on lobster when I went to the lobster restaurant, but it was worth every penny.
Yeah, it is very, very pricey, but once in a blue moon type of thing, you eat. So,
hey, come on, it's fresh out of the ocean that day. Like, you can't get any better than that.
No, you can't. You really can't.
All right. As much as I would love to sit here and talk about Prince Edward Island with you, Mike, because it is one of my favorite places on the map, we got football to talk about, and not just like off-season stuff. And we're gonna get into the Ticats moves and all that stuff. We're going to do a position by position breakdown as requested by one of our listeners for the team that we know so far. But Mike, we got an actual football game to talk about later in the episode. It's essentially week one for us of the long haul throughout the season. It's weekly from here on out until almost Christmas time. Are you ready for the heavy lifting that's going to come along with me and you sitting down? I mean, we're sitting down on Thursday this week, but what will likely be every Monday from here until we have to put pants on again?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think that I'll enjoy talking about the one win and then the one loss and then the one win and then the one loss to equal a 500 record. So I'm looking forward to this substandard season.
there's always that excitement in the air, right? Just before the season starts, every team, every fan of every team thinks that their team is going to be the one that hoists the Grey Cup at the end of the year. We know only one will, obviously, but I did head to training camp on the holiday Monday a couple weeks ago, and there's just something about being there and watching the guys practice. And I'll bring up some of the stuff I saw when we talk a little bit later. I don't want to go into too much depth into it right now, but man, you just get that sense of not only is football back, but like you get that hope springs eternal type feeling of, man, this could be the year where this team puts together something special. So, I mean, I'm going to be highly optimistic here, unlike you and your pessimistic, although I might also add possibly realistic 9-9 expectations. You and I still have a couple of weeks to come up with a good Grey Cup bet for where we stand on these records. So we'll have to bat around some ideas when we're done the show the next couple of weeks and see if we can come up with a fun bet for, I don't know, do something at Grey Cup between the two of us if when one of us is wrong. But it's just so nice that football's here. Football's around the corner. The weather's starting to turn. It's just everything's good right now.
Yeah, you know, I look forward to get that feeling, you know, watching some live football. But I have my questions right now. With there's a feels like there's a friggin' bonfire in my living room. I don't know if the Eskimos will be able to play any live games with this smoke in the air, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, July 13th, we kick it off. The Ticats start off the season, so pretty pumped that we're so close to the CFL season.
Yeah, hopefully it starts off with a win. Let's talk, Mike, about some Ticats news. We'll kick the show off with this. We got to talk a couple of signings that the team made over the last couple of weeks, and they are both figuratively and literally huge signings. The team, one of the questions I think you and I had, and I think a lot of Ticats fans had coming into the offseason or coming into training camp was, man, who's going to play right and left tackle for the Ticats? We knew some guys were back on the roster. We had Avery Jordan, who was returning. We had Kelvin Palmer. And I think we talked about these guys, whether it was the last show or a few shows ago. At some point, I know we've talked about the tackle position. And we were sitting here like, man, you look at the interior of the offensive line, and it looks really solid. But the questions remain on those bookends. And over the last 2 weeks, 10 days, did they ever answer those questions? We get, and I guess we're going to talk about these guys in tandem here. First, they go out and they sign Chris Van Zyl, who was released from the Argos in a somewhat surprising move on the eve of training camp. And then what was it, less than 10 hours later, he's announced his signing with the Ticats. And then just last weekend, boom, our boy, someone that we've been high on for a year and a half now, Riker Matthews, signs with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and all of a sudden you look at this offensive line and you go, it's the best in the East, I think, by far, and you could make a claim that it's the best in the CFL. And what's one of the things that you and I have been harping on, you in particular, I'll give you credit for this, one of the things that you've constantly been banging the drum for is, man, a stout offensive line. Mike, they got a stout offensive line now. This is an all-star caliber offensive line from every position.
Yeah, this offensive line gets me really excited. I think that this is the best one that we've seen assembled in a very long time. And I know that they haven't played together yet, but you look at the signing of Chris Van Zyl, a guy, a veteran. He's been in the league for 11 seasons with the Argonauts. He's a five-time Eastern All-Star, I believe, including last season. He's getting up there in age, 35 years old, but I am not worried about that at all. I think that this guy's going to slide right into this O-line. He gives a nice veteran presence to an otherwise, you know, pretty young offensive line, minus Mike Filer, who's been around the team for about 9 seasons now, I believe. But, man, like, I was slightly worried about those tackles. I know we both were. And now you look at them, and I'm not worried in the slightest. You know, you get a guy back like Riker Matthews, who's just been a stud for this team ever since he's been in the starting position. And to have those two guys, you know, wherever they play, I think that Van Zyl will be on the right side and Riker Matthews will be on the left. But either way, I'm just very confident now in those tackles. And we can't forget about the inside of that line, too, is just stacked with Canadian talent.
And the big thing we can't forget either, Mike, 4 Canadians now start on the offensive line for the Ticats. Mm-hmm. That creates some incredible ratio flexibility when you can start 4 Canadians on that. Now you only have to start 3 the rest of the team, and we know one of them's going to be receiver. We know one of them's going to be Ted Laurent. Now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, Mike Daly's probably going to start, but you can sub him out for an American if you need to. Jamal Westerman, now his backup doesn't have to be like – And we'll get into this in a little bit. From what I saw the one day that I was at training camp, it really looks like the team could be starting a Canadian at running back. The amount of talented starting caliber Canadians on this team is incredible. And when you think of what are the two sort of most well-known, well-worn tropes about the Canadian Football League, Mike, it's the way you win is with high caliber quarterback play and Canadian talent. And right now, you look at the Ticats, they have the East MOP from a season ago as their starting quarterback, and they have one of the most loaded starting caliber Canadian content of any team in the league. This is why my optimism and my belief in this team is so high, because you look at those hallmarks that you need for a talented team, and they had that, and then they add Chris Van Zyl on top of that. That's a spicy meatball, to famous saying.
Yeah, the depth on this team, Canadian talent-wise, is tremendous, and I, I look forward to watching these guys play. And you mentioned the running backs. I think there's a, I don't think there's going to be much. I mean, I loved Alex Green, and John White did a great job last year, but I think we have some talented guys that can fill that role pretty exceptionally with the Canadians we have. So if you're right on that assumption, I don't have a problem with it at all. It just adds to the amazing Canadian depth.
And we've mostly spent our time talking about Van Zyl, but you did touch on Riker Matthews, and we have to bring him up. He is likely going to move to the left side. You don't bring him in to not be a starter. They signed him to be a starter, obviously, and Van Zyl is more comfortable on the right. And a lot of people might not know this, but Riker Matthews, when he played college football, essentially he was BYU's left tackle for almost his entire career in the NCAA. So it's not like he doesn't have any experience playing on the left. It's just when he came to the Ticats, and he said this too, I don't know if you saw his interview on Ticats.ca, but he said this too, like when he got into the starting lineup, they had Tony Washington, and he was more comfortable at left tackle, so they slid Matthews over to right. And it's kind of incredible to think that Matthews had never really played right tackle before, and how well he played when he played for the Ticats for a year and a half. Now he goes back to his more familiar left tackle position, and you just look at what that does to this offensive line. Riker Matthews, Darius Sirocco, Mike Filer, Brandon Revenberg, Chris Van Zyl, there's all stars across the board. Last year, Sirocco was the Ticats top rookie. Revenberg was the division's top offensive lineman. You mentioned it that Van Zyl was an East Division All-Star and has been in the conversations one of the best offensive linemen in the CFL. He's in the conversations one of the best Canadian offensive linemen. He's definitely the best Canadian tackle. And then you have Mike Filer, Steady Eddie in the middle there. And now you had Riker Matthews, the man mountain on the left side. Jeremiah Mazzoli is going to have a hell of a time getting getting after him, you know what I mean? Like this looks like, yeah, this could be back to the, and I don't want to curse it by saying this, but back to that McManus era where we're seeing less than 20 sacks a season, because these guys, this like I said at the top, this is an all-star caliber, an all-star level offensive line across the board. And Riker Matthews brings that in.
Yeah, and you look at the depth behind them too. I mean, you got Matthew Girard that could be a depth guy, the newly drafted Jesse Gibbon, who, you know, might not be fully established yet or ready to play, but if in a pinch, maybe you slide him in there, he's doing good. Not a Canadian, but Jordan Avery has had time at tackle. So I think that if some of these guys, you know, we don't want this. You need also Kevin Palmer, you got back there. But if there's injuries, I have confidence that some of these guys can step in and fill the role pretty well.
I completely agree with you. But signings, when they come, that means guys have to go. And you know, Chris Van Zyl and Riker Matthews ain't making peanuts. The Ticats made a release a couple weeks ago that took a lot of people by surprise. You in particular, as your tweets were like, and when I sent you the text message about it, or did you send me the text? No, you sent me the text message.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
I sent you the Van Zyl text. You were quite surprised. The team released Jalen Saunders, who was maybe the most underrated or underappreciated receiver in the CFL the last couple of years. His numbers were tremendous. This took a lot of people by surprise, myself included, and obviously, as I said, you as well. I don't wholly understand the move. From what I've come to understand, he may have suffered a bit of a setback in his recovery from ACL surgery, so this could be a case where he just wasn't going to be able to get back on the field. And if that's the case, it doesn't really make sense to kind of keep him around. But if he gets 100% healthy and he gets back on the field, whether it be maybe he's got like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge deal with the Ticats, or maybe he's got one of those, you know, best of luck to you, and he goes and plays well somewhere else. Someone's going to get a baller when Jalen Saunders is healthy. And it just sucks that he's no longer Hamilton Tiger Cat.
It does. He's one of my favorite players, a very exciting player to watch, a Brandon Banks-like guy who was just racking up the receiving yards before he went down with that injury last season. It sucks to see him go. It really does. But, you know, sacrifices have to be made. And, you know, if you're going to get rid of a receiver and bring in some guys on the offensive line to give Mazzoli more time back there, I'm all for it. I think that we have enough talent receiver-wise to be okay. I know that there's some questions there. You know, Braylon Addison, there's a lot of high expectations on him, and he showed a lot last year, but you just don't know yet if he's that starting caliber guy. But I think they'll be all right with the receivers-wise.
Yeah, I think so too. You look at the receivers, and there's some names you look, you know, like, you know, Brandon Banks is going to start. You know, Luke Tasker is going to start. You know Mike Jones is going to start. So there's three of your five. Like you mentioned, Braylon Addison's a guy who I think everyone sees a lot in. And obviously, like you said, the tail end of last season when he kind of exploded, I think that gives him the upper hand there. I'll use my one day at training camp to talk about some guys I saw there. There's a young kid named Justin Thomas who really looked quite good. Another Canadian kid, David Ungerer, looked pretty good when I saw him there. Jalen Acklin is a guy that a lot of people have been talking about. I think famously the first day of camp, he was, it was talked about how he got in a fist fight with Delvin Bro. After a couple of one-on-ones. So he's a feisty guy, but apparently that's all patched up. So there's, you know, no harm, no foul. But the team, and I said this when I was talking to you or I was talking to someone about this. This team is a couple of things that they do well. They've been able to find linebackers. And then we talked about when they lost the guys in the offseason, that wasn't really a concern. And they've also been able to find receivers. Like Braylon Addison's a guy that no one really knew. Luke Tasker, before he came up, here was, like, aside from a famous last name, wasn't really anyone knew. Terrence Tolliver was a guy who had a, you know, pretty big NCAA pedigree, but came to the Ticats and played pretty well. Like, finding receivers has not really been an issue. And after the day I saw at training camp, there's some guys in this team that I think, even if Saunders was healthy, may have pushed him for a spot. And I think this is also a product, Mike, of the team moving away from June Jones. And that style of offense where you saw all these tiny receivers. Now you see some guys, they brought in some guys that are a little bit bigger, and maybe this is sort of Condell's influence and saying, hey, look, I want to get some size in this receiving core. I just don't want small, fast guys, as much as those guys are important to the makeup of the offense as well. But I think there's a number of reasons why the move makes sense. I know fans are going to be very angry if Saunders signs another CFL team and goes on to have a big year or a big career, and that's understandable. But as much as I would have liked to have seen him stay, like, this is in no way an indictment on Saunders. You can go back and listen to the shows from the times that Saunders played for the Ticats. You and I were just effusive in our praise of Jalen Saunders. We were big, big fans. Go back and Google, go on Three Down and search Jalen Saunders. I wrote a number of things about him, and it's always mostly been glowing terms. I was a very big fan, but I understand from maybe a financial standpoint and maybe from a roster standpoint why they would make this move and maybe go with some bigger receivers. And, you know, they have Banks still. He's a smaller guy. They have Tasker, who's not exactly huge. I remember when Austin was around, he wanted that sort of diversity where you had certain guys that could do certain things better than others, and he wanted some height and some speed and some all that other sorts of stuff. This might just be kind of a product of that and Condell's philosophy.
Yeah, it totally could be. And I'm looking at the receivers right now, and there's a couple guys that have pretty good height. You know, Shamar Chambers is 6'3". Mm-hmm. Josh Crockett is 6'4". Brian Jones is 6'4", which kind of surprised me.
Yeah, Brian Jones is a big dude. When I saw him at training camp, I was surprised how big he was.
Yeah, I didn't think he was, you know, hitting the 6-foot range. But then, yeah, Justin Sumter is 6'4". Now, I don't know if any of these guys are going to make the team, but there is size at the position of wide receiver. And I've been hearing a lot of good things about David Ungerer, the third. So maybe he's a guy that can step up into the lineup too. I'm not sure, but we're going to see some of these guys, see what they got in the game upcoming.
All right, let's talk. We'll move away from the players for a second, and we're going to get into another bit of news here. The Ticats revealed over the last week partial plans for what they're thinking for the 2021 Grey Cup, and I wrote a piece about it for Three Down. So, Mike, this is really to get your opinion on it. The big thing I think that everyone's kind of focusing on is the Grey Cup party zone, the social scene thing, where they're basically going to have the south end zone be kind of standing room only with a bunch of food pavilions and just all this other sorts of neat stuff, kind of taking what the Ticats do at home games now with sort of their communal areas and just expanding that for a larger audience. I personally, and you can read this in my Three Down piece, I think this is a great thing. I think this is a great way to sort of deal with the capacity issues at Tim Hortons Field without forcing people to sit in an uncomfortable metal bleacher. Like I said, I think this is sort of just the natural progression of what the Ticats are already doing at home games. I know people like to make a lot of assumptions about, well, the Ticats fudge their numbers on how many tickets they sold and yada, yada, yada. I can tell you from firsthand experience, people congregate on the concourse. They're in the Coors Banquet Bar. They're in the end zone at the Stipley. They're in these communal areas conversing and watching the game at the same time. So it's the Ticats have very much been at the forefront of this idea of a ticket is your admission into the stadium. You don't have to be like sewn to your seat. I, as kind of an old timer, I like to sit in my seat and watch the game. Other people like to move around. Other people like to interact and be social at these games. I think this is a great idea. It's one of my favorite things about the plans they unveil, and we'll talk about some of the other stuff in a second. What did you think about it when you heard it, Mike?
Well, I took a look at the video that they have on Ticats.ca, you know, talking about their plans in the end zone, and I think it's a great idea. I think that it's been a great idea since they've moved into Tim Hortons Field to get that, you know, social experience, because the younger crowd likes that. They don't necessarily want to sit down and watch the game, you know, every minute of the game. They want to walk around, you know, have a beer, talk to their friends. Blah, blah, blah. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, they're going to have bands playing there until kickoff. It's going to be a great pre-game party. So it's different. It's new. And I think it's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah, I think it's the different and the new that's got people sort of poo-pooing
and
it.
What, who cares? Like, you don't have to be in the – you don't have to buy a social ticket. You can sit in the stands. And I understand that it's not going to be as much a big attendance like previous Grey Cups. It's going to be around 33,000, I believe. Maybe the ticket prices will be a little bit high because of that. But that's just how we're going to have to deal with it. I think it's a better idea than sticking metal stands in the other end zone, though.
Well, it's unique, and it's something, again, like I said, this will be, I think, the third time I've said it now, it's what the Ticats already do at home games now. It's part of the makeup of watching a game at Tim Hortons Field. There's the social aspect, and there's the people who want to sit in the stands and watch the game. You're going to get the best of both worlds, and if you have a ticket to the game, you can mosey on down to that social area, and you can test out the – like, I personally am going to go down to the stadium early. I'm sure you'll be here with me, so we'll go down to the stadium early. We're going to go to those food trucks, because this is the thing that, like – the Hamilton food scene is something that's one of the main factors of the reason that I'm so happy the game's going to be here in a couple of years, and that I can show people like you who hasn't been here in a long time, but not just you, other people, the food scene in Hamilton is A+, I promise you. And to have some of the best chefs from the best restaurants in the city to set up a bunch of food trucks essentially, and not just cook food, but to tailor it to each of the different CFL cities. Like, I'm really interested to see what that's about. Having this giant stage where the halftime show is going to be, and, you know, as an aside, is there any way that the Arkells aren't the halftime show for the 2021 Grey Cup? Like, unless they get someone like Beyonce, it's got to be them, right?
You'd think so. They're obviously a local band, big Ticat fans, and they're a pretty popular band, you know, in Canada.
They have a national following.
They really do. So I would have no problem. I think it'd be the perfect fit for the halftime show. Unless you're right, and they get some mega global star. But I don't think that's going to happen. So to keep it local and, you know, even though they're local, they're very popular across the nation. It would be a good move, I'd say.
Yeah, but bring your wallet and bring your appetite, Mike, because we're going to be hitting up every single one of those food areas, and we're going to taste something from the menu just because why the heck not. But yeah, I am excited about this. I think these plans are great. I think some of the stuff that they're – like, obviously, this is just the initial stuff they're putting out there. The ticket price, I don't know if people have seen this, but $89 for a ticket in that social area, that doesn't seem too prohibitively – like, if you're worried about ticket prices, that's not – up there. I do think that the prices for regular seats are going to be much, much higher. But if you're one of those people who are like, man, I don't want to pay $400 to sit in the seat at Grey Cup, pay $90 and you can hang out in the social area. And I think a lot of people are going to have a good time there. It just seems like there's been some negativity around it. I dealt with a troll on Twitter saying it's stupid and lazy and yada, yada, yada. I just think that that's narrow thinking. I think the team The Ticats deserve a ton of credit for thinking outside the box. And we heard, I don't know if you remember, but we heard in the lead up to the announcement that Hamilton's bid was unique. This was clearly one of the unique factors that they put into their bid. So I, for one, applaud them for trying something new, and it's going to be something that, as the team is saying, is uniquely Hamilton. And I wonder if it's something that maybe other teams, if they can do it, will adopt in the future. But I'm really excited to see what we can get here in 2021.
Yeah, and I also applaud the outdoor heaters that will be in that section as well, because as we know, in Canada, late November can get pretty cold, and there can be a pretty nasty wind at that stadium site. So the outdoor heaters will be well used, I presume.
Yeah, although to be fair, the last few Novembers it's been pretty balmy weather. Like the East semi that we went to, like I wore a hoodie and a pair of track pants. Like, it wasn't a winter coat. I didn't have to wear a toque. Like, I wore a baseball cap. I remember the 2014 East Final, first quarter, I sat out there in a T-shirt. Like, it was that warm out. So it hasn't been too bad here. But, again, you never know. It's also going to be a little later. And, you know, it's always nicer to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it, as I once was told.
Yeah, really happy for the city of Hamilton that they're going to finally get that elusive Grey Cup. It's been way, way too long, and the plans look good so far, and I look forward to seeing the rest of them.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, Mike, a listener asked us to break down the team position by position and where we think they may have improved and where we think they may need a little bit of more work. So why don't we do that now before we get into the game preview? We'll go kind of not necessarily rapid fire. We'll take our time here, but we won't spend too much time on it. Let's start with the marquee position. I think this is a pretty quick one to cover, Mike. Quarterbacks. The team has only three on the roster, which is a little bit of a surprise to me, to be honest. Jeremiah Mazzoli, Dane Evans, and newcomer Hayden Moore. I don't know about you, but I look at this group and I see two returnees and a developmental quarterback, and I think that these guys are pretty much in the exact same boat that they were a year ago. I know some people will disagree with that because there was a certain number two with the JM initials that was on the squad last year, and he's no longer here. But I look at the Ticats quarterbacks, and I don't see a lot of difference between this group and the group that they went into the season with last year.
No, neither do I. I think Dane Evans has a lot of potential. But otherwise, I think that, you know, it's basically break even. There's not it's not an improvement. It's not a downgrade. It's just around the same, but I'm still confident in these three guys for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much – this is the Jeremiah Mazzoli show once again, and the team's fortunes kind of rest on his shoulders. If he goes out there and plays the way he did last year, I think this team has a chance to be very successful. If he gets hurt, I think the team's in trouble, but you can say that about a number of teams across the league. And if his play regresses, then the team won't meet expectations. Like, I think really when you look at the quarterback position, as much as everything's about the same, it really all rests on number eight.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, we both think that he's going to have a great year with the offensive line improved. So we'll see what he can do this year. I think he's going to top his numbers from last year and maybe be the Well, there's a bold prediction here. Maybe be the CFL MOP this year.
I don't think that's that bold a prediction, to be honest with you. I look at the race right now, and, you know, Mitchell and Riley are obviously going to be in the conversation. They always will until the day they retire. But guys winning, like, I know Riley wasn't the MOP last year, but Mitchell was. And to win back-to-back is pretty tough. You look at the East, and you don't really see a lot of competition. Right now, obviously, we're still in the heat of training camp, and right now it looks like Mazzoli is head and shoulders above everyone in the race at the moment. But yeah, I it would not surprise me if Mazzoli was league MOP by the end of the year. But we'll, you know, like everything, have to wait and see. Let's look at running backs, Mike. This is where there's been a big change. Alex Green and John White, you mentioned earlier, they're both gone. They're replaced with Sean Thomas Erlington, who was back from last year, who more played slot back last year. But like I said, I saw at training camp, he was running with the number ones. He was the starting running back with the offense. So it looks like there's the possibility that he could be the guy, at least to start the season. Jackson Bennett, a guy that I was high on as a potential Sam replacement and as a special teams guy, they moved him from the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball and converted him to running back. Cameron Marshall, who is a former Rider and Blue Bomber, is now with the Ticats. Malik Irons is one of their draft picks from this past year, who a lot of people think has starting caliber potential. And Ray Lowry is a guy who, again, the Ticats kind of unearth these running backs every now and then. And he's going to be in tough to crack the roster just because of all the names I just mentioned. But I look at this group, Mike, and I see a pretty deep group. I see three talented Canadians. Jackson Bennett made – oh, man, when I the day I went to camp, he had a catch and run out of the backfield that was – Mazzoli, they snapped the ball. He made a great route. He was wide open in the middle of the field. Mazzoli hits him, and he – cut it upfield and was gone. It was like it was one of those plays that even at camp got fans kind of hooting and hollering. It was super impressive. So I look at this running back group and, well, I think I would have gone into last year more confident in who they had because of the sort of the pedigree of Green and White. I don't know if there'll be a huge drop off this year with the guys they have. They might not have that guy that sort of, you know, gets the 250 carries and goes for 1,200 yards and what have you. But the sum total of the parts of all these guys, I think, leads to so could be some matchup difficulties. I think they're going to ride the hot hand or they're going to give multiple guys a chance to get a look, and I think that could add a nice dimension to this offense.
I'm gonna say that it's a downgrade from last year, though. I think that with you had a guy like Alex Green, who played tremendously with the Ticats, John White, who had flashes of greatness for this team, and you also had Sean Thomas Erlington and Mercer Timmis still on the team. So I think that even though I'm confident in these guys that are in the backfield right now, that we might be on the starting depth chart, I think that it's a slight downgrade just because you lose that experience of a guy like Alex Green and John White.
I can't disagree with that, honestly. I think had I not seen what these guys were doing at practice, I might be – again, this is all part of the eternal optimism that I have at this time of year. I just think that, yeah, on paper, it definitely looks like this is a slight downgrade. I think when the year is over, I think we're going to look back and say they didn't really miss a ton when it came to the running back position. But we'll have to wait and see, right?
Exactly.
Receiver, okay, we got a bunch of names here. Obviously, the well-known ones, Mike Jones, Brandon Banks, Luke Tasker, Braylon Addison, Shamad Chambers, they're all back. Chambers coming back after missing all of last year with a torn ACL. Then we got a bunch of newcomers. Jalen Acklin, I talked about. Josh Crockett, you mentioned. Justin Thomas, Marcus Tucker, Desmond White, Brian Jones, Marcus Davis, David Ungerer, Justin, like the team has a ton of receivers at camp right now. Missing are guys like, and I know he wasn't with them in camp last year, but Chris Williams is no longer with the team. Terrence Tolliver is no longer with the team. I'm trying to think of who else they had to start last year that I'm forgetting about. I think those are probably the two biggest, right? So they lose those guys, but we saw Addison step up at the end of last year. I think all in all, you look at this group, and I think it's pretty similar. If I'm being kind of honest with you, I don't see a ton of regression here. I think you got your veterans in Jones and Chambers and Banks and Tasker, and you got your sort of what's the word I'm looking for here? Mike, it's killing me. Not new. Well, you got your newcomers, and then you got sort of. I'm completely veterans? At a loss. What?
Veterans?
No, not veterans. And you know what? Then you got Braylon Addison, who's a great what if. I'm going to kick myself when the word comes to me in a few minutes. But potential. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay,
potential.
There you go.
Braylon Addison's got all that potential after what we saw last year. So I look at this group, and I don't see a ton of regression from a year ago. What say you?
I say it's a downgrade. You lose a guy like Jalen Saunders, who I know he's had an
injury. I can't believe I forgot about him. We just talked about him, and I didn't even – oh, my God.
You lose a guy like him, and I think that that's, not a huge blow, but I think it hurts the team a little bit. And a guy like Terrence Tolliver, who we both know is a very talented receiver and maybe wasn't a good fit for June Jones's offense and maybe would have been a better fit for what Tommy Condell might do this year. I think that's a bit of a loss. And it's just the unknown of some of these guys coming in. Like Braylon Addison, like you said, has a ton of potential, and I'm really high on him. But, we've looked at players before that have had a ton of potential and they kind of fall off when they get that starting role. So I don't think it's a huge downgrade, but I think it is a slight downgrade at the wide receiver positions.
Offensive line, we spent 10 minutes talking about the O-line.
Upgrade.
Massive upgrade. Not. It's not even a question. We can move on, right?
Yeah.
Defensive line, I think, is the exact same. You go from Adrian Tracy and Justin Capocotti on the two ends and Ted Laurent and Nikita Whitlock and Jason Neal on the inside, and you look at the start. Now, Tracy's still with the team. You look at the team now, and you go Jagarrett Davis, Adrian Tracy, Ted Laurent, Dylan Wynn, Jamal Westerman, and that's murderer's row, man. You can't double team Ted Laurent because then Dylan Wynn's going to get at you. You double team Westerman, Jagarrett Davis gets one-on-one coverage on the outside, and vice versa. You double team Davis, Westerman's going to eat your lunch. The trenches for the Hamilton Tiger Cats right now might be combined the absolute best in the CFL. There is not a weakness on the offensive line. And the starting four of Davis, Laurent, Wynn, and Westerman, Mike, there's not a weakness there either. So I'm sure you're going to agree with me, but let's just make it official. Massive upgrade on the D-line, right?
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Josh. And the depth, you just look at some of these names. Like, you know, you got a young guy like Connor McGough. You mentioned Tracy. You know, the four starters are going to be phenomenal. Plus, you can cycle in guys that will do a tremendous job as well. So the offensive and defensive lines, massive, massive upgrades. So I'm really, really excited about these lines.
Linebacker, Mike, I think this is going to be the first time I say downgrade. And I think that's only because, much like, say, the running back position, there's a lot of unknowns here. Simone Lawrence, we know what we're going to get out of him, right? And then it's a bunch of question marks. Justin Tuggle has looked really good. He looked especially good in the camp I went to, but he's not a guy that's spent years as a starter in the CFL like Larry Dean had. And then you look at the Sam linebacker position, and Rico Murray's still not in camp dealing with some personal matters, but from all we know, he's going to be there soon. They've been going with a guy by the name of Demontre Hurst as the starting Sam linebacker, and that's a raw rookie to the CFL, a former DB in college who is now trying to make that transition like a lot of guys do to the Sam linebacking position. But there's questions here. They have some talent. Chris Frey, Lucas Walker, guys that are in the mix to start at Mike as well, ahead of Tuggle, but Tuggle looks to have sort of the inside track to the starting job there. You know, you got guys like Nick Shortle and Curtis Newton, Canadian guys who are going to be good on special teams and may see a little bit on defense, but won't see a ton of action. But I don't know. I don't think you can really look at this linebacking crew. And maybe at the end of the year, we'll look back and go, no, they were just as good as the guys that came before them. But when you lose the division's most outstanding defensive player, it's really hard to say that the group that's coming the next year is an upgrade. So to me, it's a definite downgrade for the linebackers right now.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one, too. I'm looking forward to seeing Rico Murray back with the Ticats. He was one of my favorite players when he was with them. But you're right, you know, losing a guy like Unamba at the Sam linebacker position, where he did a great job covering guys, and a guy like Larry Dean, who's just a natural leader and a tremendous, tremendous linebacker. So I'm going to have to go with you and say it's a downgrade. It's on paper right now, it's a downgrade, and maybe as we go along, they'll show us that we're wrong on this, but right now I'm going to have to say down.
Yeah, I don't think you can look at the group and see all that change and not say that at this moment in time, they're not as good as they were last year. Like I think that's fair. Let's look at the secondary, Mike, and I don't know if we can say downgrade or upgrade, because the starting five that ended last year, the starting five that are here right now, Delvin Bro, Carriel Brooks, Mike Daly, Richard Leonard, and Jamal Roll. So is it an upgrade because now these guys have a year of playing together? Is it a downgrade because you're not high on the secondary? Like, I don't really know where to go here. You add guys like Tunde Adeleke, who I think is a guy who has starting caliber skills. So I think that's an upgrade there, is your backup safety, or maybe even your starting safety if he overtakes Mike Daly for the job. Rico Murray is a guy that can play a lot of positions in the secondary. So if he doesn't play Sam, he can play out there. Like, I don't know. I guess it's kind of a wash to me. I guess maybe a slight upgrade because the guys who are in sort of secondary roles, like I said, Adeleke and Murray, are better than the guys they had last year. Maybe. I don't know. This one's tough because it's all the same guys.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say it's pretty even Stevens from last year. Maybe there'll be an improvement because maybe the new defensive ideas of, you know, you had Jerry Glanville last year, and we saw what happened in the Eastern Final. That secondary was absolutely torched. So maybe with a new scheme thrown in there, the same five guys can do a better job. But I'm going to have to say it's even from last year.
Let's talk special teams before we finish this off. I think this is a tough one too. So, you know, long snappers get no love, but Aaron Crawford returns for another season. He's as solid as they come. Liam Hirelahu is back, and that's well, that's interesting to say the least, mm-hmm. but I don't think you can say him coming back as a downgrade, because if he's the exact same as last year, then it's the same, right? I think this all comes down to whomever wins the kick and punt return battle, and I don't think we're going to know that until we see these guys in game action. So I'll sit here right now and say upgrade, because I don't think it could get much worse. Because the return game for the Ticats last year wasn't very good. I think we will both agree with that. The coverage units weren't great. I think what gives me the upgrade here, Mike, and we'll talk about coaches in a second, but we're going to talk about Wormwood now.
You son of a gun.
It's the return. Yeah, it's the return of Jeff Reinbold. Jeff Reinbold as the team special teams coordinator, I think, automatically makes the special teams unit better. So with that said, I'll say, we even with the unknowns, upgrade. I'm guessing you're going to agree and use Reinbold as your reason too, eh?
Yeah, I was going to say that it's tough to know who's going to be starting on the, you know, the cover teams and who's going to be the returners right now. But just because of Reinbold coming back, you know, we had those couple of glorious years where he was the special teams coordinator and Brandon Banks was back there doing his thing. And the cover units were very good during those years as well. So I'm going to give it the slight upgrade just because Reinbold's back with the Ticats.
All right, let's end this by talking about coaches, Mike. So last year, we went into the season with June Jones as head coach, Jerry Glanville as the team's defensive coordinator, June Jones as the team's offensive coordinator, and Frank Gans Jr. as the team's special teams coordinator. This year, it's Orlando Steinhauer in the head coaching role. Tommy Condell is now the team's offensive coordinator. Mark Washington is the team's defensive coordinator, and Jeff Reinbold is the team's special teams coordinator. As much as I love June Jones, as fun as it was to have Jerry Glanville around, I think I'd be hard-pressed to say that this isn't a massive upgrade simply for the fact that this coaching staff has an abundance of Canadian football experience. You can say how much experience those other guys had in football, but in Canadian football, the coaching staff, it's night and day between these two coaching staffs from last year and this year. So I'm saying upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to say upgrade too. I would have loved to see June Jones stick around another year being the offensive coordinator, but Tommy Condell slides right into that position, and I have a ton of confidence in him. Like you said, he's been around the league. He's been around the game for, you know, not as long as a guy like Orlando Steinhauer or Mark Washington maybe, but still has a ton of CFL experience. So, like you said, it just – the three, there's guys that are – in those positions that have a lot of experience in the three down game, and that should benefit the Ticats a great deal, I think.
And guys have done it before. Condell's been an offensive coordinator in numerous places in the CFL, maybe most famously with the Ticats during the heyday of the Austin era. Reinbold has a ton of experience as a special teams coordinator. Again, maybe most notably with the Ticats during the heyday of the Austin era. Mark Washington has a ton of experience under Wally Buono with the BC Lions as a defense. Like, the experience, these guys have been in these jobs before. They know what to expect. The only guy in a new position is Steinhauer, and he's one of those guys that everyone was talking about as being sort of the in-coaching candidate for a number of years. He's a head coach in waiting, so to speak, and now he gets his opportunity. And I don't know if you've been following along with the daily training camp videos that they've been posting on Ticats.ca, but I have been, and you just get the sense of, like, Ken Austin was often terse, and I think that rubbed people the wrong way, and June Jones was a bit aloof, and I think that rubbed people the wrong way, and you look at Orlando Steinhauer, and he's that good mix of fun, but also serious. Like, he comes off to me as what you want your head coach to be. He's the perfect mix of both Austin and Jones, which is kind of exactly what you'd want. You'd want a little bit of both, right? You want a guy that's going to get after guys, but at the same time is going to try to teach him. So I look at Steinhauer, even though he's new to this role, he seems like the role's not too big for him. So like I said, upgrade across the board.
He's been, I think he's been ready for this head coaching position for a number of years now. He was the assistant head coach last year, so hopefully that helped him in his progression to being the head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And yeah, I think that he is, you know, we went from Ken Austin to June Jones, which are pretty much polar opposite coaches. You know, Ken Austin is a bit of a hard ass, and June Jones is more of a college coach, a players coach. And if you have a mix of those two things, I think that it's going to be the perfect mixture for this team.
I agree. So lots of upgrades. You've got some downgrades here. Overall, the team, do you think going into the season this year, you're more optimistic with this club, the same level of optimism, or are you looking at this as being kind of a down year? As of right now, we'll obviously going to be doing a full CFL preview later in the month, or I guess next month. It's the end of May. So yeah, we're not going to get this done before May. So before the season starts, we're going to do a preview. But as you sit here right now, after we kind of talk position by position here, what, you look at the Tie Cats, don't do the 9-9 thing. Be serious here, M Bone. Come on, what do you think? Do you look at this team and you have higher expectations going into this season, lower expectations, or are your expectations about the same?
I have higher expectations for this team just based alone on the improvement of the offensive line and the defensive line. I think that where I gave downgrades for positions, they are slight downgrades. They're not massive downgrades, and I could be proven wrong, and maybe they are truly upgrades as the season goes along. So I expect this team to be quite a bit better than they were last year.
But you only have them going 9-9.
True.
Are you moving off the 9-9?
Well, they were 8-10 last year, so that's
so 9-9, it's one win. That's not much better.
Well, you know,
but it is better, right? So, it is better.
Yeah, it is better. So, you know, if they're 9-9, I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope they can make they'll have the best record they've ever had at 12-6 or whatever it is. So we'll see, but I am sticking with my 9-9. I'm a very stubborn man.
I hope you're wrong too, and then we'll shave your eyebrows at Grey Cup or something.
Well, we're not doing that.
Shave your head, maybe?
No, we're not doing that either.
What if I put the beard on the line?
We'll talk. We'll discuss.
Okay,
there's lots of time to lay down a bet.
I've got you on the hook, though, because I haven't shaved my beard since 2010. So by the time Grey Cup rolls around, it's almost been a decade since I had a bare baby face. So I don't know. If I'm putting the beard online, you got to put up something big.
All right. We'll discuss. We'll figure something out.
Okay, but let's talk about something that we have waited. Oh, geez. When was the last game preview we did, Mike? Would it have been the East Final? I don't even think we did a Grey Cup one. So, man, we're 6-plus months since you and I got to say this. Mike, we got to preview a Tie Cats game right now. This Saturday, a couple of days from now as we record this, the Tie Cats will hit the field for the first time since losing to the Ottawa Redblacks in the East Final. And they will hit the field at TD Place against the Ottawa Redblacks in the team's first preseason game. We're going to go a little bit different than we did last year with the game preview, at least for the preseason. We'll work out the kinks and figure out what we're going to do during the regular season. But right now, it's preseason. We're not going to sit. Wins and losses don't matter. We're sitting here. We're going to look at players, essentially. We're going to kind of what we want to see in this game. So, Mike, knowing this game's on TV and you're going to get a chance to watch it, what are you looking for? And are there any specific players you're kind of keen to see how they do in the team's first preseason game of 2019?
Now, keep in mind, we don't have, you know, depth charts to look at to see who's playing. Maybe some of these guys that I picked, like an experienced guy like Chris Van Zyl, maybe he doesn't play the first game. But if he does, I want to take a look at him, see how he looks out there. I know he's coming off an all-star season in the East. He's getting up there in age. So I just want to see how he handles his first game with the Tiger Cats on that offensive line. Another guy I want to see what he has is Malik Irons, the draft pick from this year. He looks like he could have a lot of potential at that running back position. I want to see how he does. And then one of the big signings of the offseason, Dylan Wynn. We know he's a good player. We know he can do some damage. I want to see how he looks in black and gold. So those are three guys that I'm really keeping an eye on this first preseason game.
Yeah, when I went to training camp, I watched a little bit of Van Zyl just because when you're watching camp, you get a chance to more, and it's less about watching plays develop and hoping for a touchdown and cheering and all that. And it's more, you do get to watch sort of individual players. I watched Jesse Gibbon when he was out there for a little bit and came away reasonably impressed. I wrote a piece for Three Down about what I saw at camp that day. So shout out to Jesse Gibbon, fellow Sherwood Saint alumnus, who that's where I went to high school. So I'm cheering for the guy, because if you went to a school that I went to, I'm going to cheer for you, as we know with all the U of T players in the CFL, no matter who they play for. Shout out Levi Noel for the Toronto Argonauts, who's my boy, because he went to the same school as me. But anyway, I digress. Van Zyl's a guy that I watched at training camp and got a chance to really kind of look at him in that one day I was there. And, man, he looks like a beast. He looks like a man among boys. He's massive, like absolutely enormous, and just manhandled no matter who was against him. It was quite impressive. So I think those are some three decent picks, Mike, for guys to watch. I got a couple that I'm going to keep a keen eye on. One of them is Jalen Acklin, who we mentioned a little bit earlier, got in a bit of a tussle with Delvin Bro on the first day of training camp. But he's a guy who looks to have the inside track to be one of the team's five starting receivers. So as a guy who's shown well in camp, and the day I was there made a few nice catches, I think that's a guy that I want to see when the lights are on, if he can convert sort of the practice stuff into on-field stuff. He's definitely a guy that I'm going to keep my eye on. And the other one is the guy that I saw, at least when I was there, who was giving first team reps at Sam linebacker, and that's Demontre Hurst. I mentioned him a little bit earlier. He was with the starting unit on defense as a Sam, so I'm kind of curious to see how he can do there. We saw a year ago the team went into the year with an idea of who's going to be their Sam linebacker, and then Don Unamba kind of came out of nowhere and took the job for his own. I think we all think Rico Murray is the guy that's going to start at Sam, but until he shows up, it's possible that Demontre Hurst just takes the job. So I'm really curious to see what those two guys can do when the lights are finally shining. Two rookies to the CFL. I think those are the guys that I'm kind of keeping my eye on even across the board. I like your Malik Irons pick. Like, I'm curious to see what Sean Thomas Erlington can do with the starting offense if he gets a chance to get in there. Like, there's a lot of things to look at, but Acklin and Hurst, I think, Mike, are the two guys that I'm most keen on seeing on Saturday after – or Saturday night. I think it's – Saturday night game, isn't it? Yeah, 7 o'clock.
Yeah. And, from the other side, the other team, it'll be interesting to see the quarterback play of the Ottawa Redblacks, because, you know, you got a couple guys that are question marks right now. You know, Jonathan Jennings is had a lot of potential, had one really good year, and then kind of fell off, and it just doesn't have the accuracy or didn't in the last couple of seasons. So – we're going to see what's maybe a preview of how the Ottawa offense will look. And, I'm going to be honest, it might be ugly this year.
Yeah, I everything we've said so far, we couch in it's the preseason, it's training camp. We all understand that. I don't think we'll learn much about what Ottawa will be offensively, defensively, or on special teams in this game, just like I don't think we'll learn a ton about what the Ticats will be in any of those facets in this game either, no matter what the final score is. But yeah, Ottawa intrigues me simply because I can't remember, and I'm sure a CFL historian out there will correct me. I can't remember a team that went from potential juggernaut in Ottawa, because you looked at the team that went to the Grey Cup last year, and they were top to bottom one of the most talented teams in the CFL. Obviously, they got to the Grey Cup, but they lost an all-star caliber QB. They lost Deontay Spencer, an all-star caliber return man and receiver. They lose Greg Ellingson. Like, they lose Sir Vincent Rogers, William Powell. Like, this is a totally different team. Jamie Elizondo, their offensive coordinator, who I don't think the world of him as a coach, but there was continuity there. He's gone. Like, a lot of changes in Ottawa, and it could be this could be the year, and I've been saying it for a few years, and I've always been proven wrong, but this could finally be the year where Ottawa kind of takes that dip and they have to sort of, you know, restock the cupboard, because right now it doesn't look very – it looked pretty bare. It looked pretty bare in the cupboard in Ottawa right now. And again, I don't ever count – after the last few years of me thinking this is the year that Ottawa finally takes a tumble, I am not going to go on a limb and say that they're going to be a terrible team this year, because they prove me wrong so often. But this could be the first year where we see a little – with the exception of the first year of the franchise, this could be the first year where we really see adversity hit Ottawa. And it'll be interesting to see how that team handles this, because it's not something they've ever dealt with really before.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever really a good thing when you have an open competition for your starting quarterback position.
I agree.
I mean, it just means that you don't have the – you're not confident in one guy, and I think that is very important going into camp. So I presume that Jonathan Jennings will eventually be the starter, but at this point they're not really sure. So it's him and Dominic Davis. They're going to have to battle it out, and we haven't really seen much of Dominic Davis play. So, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting year in Ottawa.
And Ottawa fans always kind of treated Trevor Harris really weirdly. Like, they never
– oh, yeah.
I don't think they ever
They're quick to boo. They're very quick to boo in Ottawa. Ottawa and Winnipeg are very quick to boo.
They are. And, like, when you have two quarterbacks – now, Jennings has a ton of starting experience, but Dominic Davis absolutely does not. You have two guys who, like, if they get – one of them gets off, like, whoever starts – and I think, I think it'll be Jennings, whether that's the first game of the year or just eventually. I think Jennings is going to be the starter there. He has a couple bad series. He has a couple bad games. Like, the Boo Birds are going to be out, and it's like, I don't know. I think you got to pick your guy and you got to go with him. I think you look at the teams across the league, and maybe it's just the benefit of having a Mike Riley or a Boo Levi Mitchell or a Jeremiah Mazzoli or even a Matt Nichols. Matt Nichols takes a lot of heat in Winnipeg, but the team never wavered from him, right? And then even when he hit that rough patch, they bounced back. They got to the West Final. You look around the league, and like even the Argos are having a bit of an open competition, but I think when you're one of the teams that are basically building from scratch, the Argos were the worst team in the CFL last year. The Owls, same thing. Like, I think those teams you can have this sort of competition. The Red Blacks were one of the premier teams in the league last year. So this feels to me like a step back year because of stuff like, you know, the changing of the guard at quarterback and all the players they lost in free agency. That's what it feels like. But I'm with you. I never really like to see teams go into the start of the season with this sort of like battle for, like, you know, coaches will always say every position's up for grabs and anyone. But look, we know Bo Levi Mitchell's not losing a starting job in Calgary, no matter how poorly he plays. You know what I mean? So I look at that. I look at Ottawa, and I mean, I guess we're getting a mini sort of CFL season in preview here going now, but
yeah,
there are definitely some questions in Ottawa that they're not going to be answered on Saturday's game, but I'm going to be keeping an eye on them, and we'll probably sit here and talk about them next week, especially if those quarterbacks, they play well, like super well, and we're surprised, or they play really poorly. I think we'll be back here with some scorching hot takes on the Ottawa Red Blacks next week.
Yeah, and I think I like what Chamberlain did in Toronto. He pretty much came out and said that James Franklin is the starting quarterback. So you know, they go into the season knowing who the guy is, but Ottawa and Montreal are a bit of a question mark, although I think that Pipkin will ultimately be the starter in Montreal because of the, you know, the talent that he showed last year.
I thought his name was Tony Pumpkin, Mike.
Tony Pumpkin. I
mean,
forgot
I'm
about
sorry,
that.
I'm sorry, M-Bone. Tony M-Bone. Yes. Your name's M-Bone. I thought you were Mike.
I know, it's disrespectful, and I don't appreciate it, but you're right. Tony Pumpkin should be the guy this upcoming season. I think he'll be you never know, but I think he has a ton of potential, and he'll be a good quarterback in this league.
All right, Mike, so that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to do a show, and we're going to actually talk about a game. Like, not preview a game. We're going to talk about an actual game that took place, man. I am pumped. How excited are you?
Through the roof. I can't wait to DVR that game because I believe I'll be working. But as soon as I get home, I'm going to pop it in and I'll evaluate the talent on the Ticats. And it's just fun. I wasn't able to watch any of the first preseason game between Edmonton and Winnipeg, I think it was. I can't remember who they played. But
it was BC.
BC, okay. So it'll be fun just to watch some football, even though preseason football isn't the best. It'll still be fun to watch some three-down football this upcoming weekend.
It will be indeed. So that was PodsQEE for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm M-Bone. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.